Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first and the only news podcast. My name's Katie Stoll.
That's true. At least part of it. Your name was correct. Katie yeah. Stoll. Hi, I'm Cody Johnston. It's my name.
Cody Johnston. Joining us today is our friend, the host of the House of Pod Medical Podcast, Dr. Kaveh Hoda. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hi.
Hello. Hey. Hello.
Hi.
We're going to check in with you in a brief moment, but first, I need to wish everybody very happy National Cherries Jubilee Day. It's very important.
Finally.
That we get that out of the way. Hmm. Yeah. Who doesn't love a cherry jubilee?
Man, I love cherries jubilee.
I feel like I don't even know if I've ever had.
I think it's a drink.
I think it's a dessert.
You're probably right.
I think
right.
It's a dessert-y kind of
a dessert-y
is
beverage.
Is it dessert you
it's
drink?
A,
that's it.
It's a dessert.
An aperitif.
Okay, it's a dessert. There's some golden rum involved, but it's mostly...
It's both.
Yeah, it's a little
but
both.
But it's mostly dessert. Look, we could go on and on about our love for National
and
Cherries
And we will.
Day.
Not, okay.
Because I want to take this time to encourage you to celebrate by going and making sure that you're registered to vote. That's because earlier this week was National Voter Registration Day. And like, I know you've checked, but just check again, double check, call your parents and your friends and your siblings. And I don't know, maybe like that one random teacher that you're still in contact with from high school or like your elderly neighbor or like your little 18-year-old cousin.
Yeah.
You know, who's not so into politics.
Is he?
My 18-year-old cousin? I don't have an 18-year-old cousin. I have my 18-year-old nephew.
That's what I thought you were really referring to.
We're working on it. We're working on it. He's not so into the voting. I admit it, but I'm working on him.
That is sad.
It is sad, but
I understand.
That's for another podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put my nephew on blast. I'm just going to keep telling him to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's lots of people in your life that you can reach out to. You know, like the woman at the bodega on your corner.
Yeah. Yeah, she's stuck there. She's at you have to. She has to talk to you by law.
She does.
It's a good opportunity to bring it up.
I will say that it's possibly maybe like don't harass random workers while they're at work to vote and register to vote.
No, I'm talking about people that you've got a relationship.
Well, your familiars. Go to your familiars and encourage that.
Don't accost people on the street like randomly. To tell them to vote.
Yeah, don't like grab them and like, have you registered to vote? Yeah.
Okay. No.
Yeah, that would be bad. But you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this.
Mm-hmm,
I'm just saying, crunch time, my babies. Let's make sure you're registered. I'm still registered in the district that I used to live in.
Okay.
And I've been debating if I should switch. Legally, am I supposed to? Probably. But I want to vote for Nithya.
Do you that seems like something that
I shouldn't say on a podcast?
I mean, say cool. say as much as you want, but we'll figure that out where you should be registered legally.
I'm
to
not
vote.
Gonna tell you guys where I land on that decision. I am registered. I might switch my
just
registry.
Putting it out there. Yeah,
just putting it out there to also vote for Nithya Raman if you live in Los Angeles District 4. Cool.
No idea who you're talking about, but that's cool.
Understandable. Right. It is one district in a sea of many.
Kaveh, can you take a moment and tell us how you're doing? How the heck are you?
First of all, I want to thank you guys for having me on the show. I feel like some listener who won a contest and he gets to like come on the show. You know what I mean? So I'm really, I know I should be more
that's
aloof about
an
it.
Honor.
Like I know like the cool guests are kind of like they come on. They're like, oh, whatever. I'm here or whatever. You guys are lucky to have me. But I'm like excited to be here. I really like the show. So thank you guys for having me. That being said, everything else is horrible. And even in COVID adjusted terms, it's been a really weird week. I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but it's been weird. It's been really strange. And, we're going to talk about COVID and that situation's not great, but I'm sure we're going to talk about some other stuff that's also been troubling me. Yeah. It's not great. Yeah. There's a lot of not great stuff.
How is your work stress right now?
You know, it's stable. There's just like this. It's been like an endurance trial. I don't deal with as much COVID directly as a lot of my friends do. thankfully. But, you know, even the amount I deal with is, it is stressful. And my friends who are on the front lines doing ER stuff and the ICUs, I mean, they're, the ER docs in particular, they're tired. I mean, they've been going through this at like high adrenaline levels since January. I am, and we've talked about this on our show, I am very concerned about what's going to happen to the future of American healthcare, just in terms of what happens to the doctors when this is all said and done, because they're just exhausted, they're burnt out. And that initial like couple of months where people were like, oh, we respect our ER doctors, we love our doctors, it's great. Uh-huh. Like, that's already worn off, you know?
Yep, it sure has.
I was thinking about that the other day. The cheers. The
nobody's
7 or 8 o'clock
at
cheers.
5 p.m.,
Not that anyone heard this cheers, but still.
No, I got to say, that actually was really nice. I mean, my actual street didn't do it. It's kind of annoying. But like, I could hear other streets doing it. And I was like, that's so cool. And like, I think doctors really appreciate it. Like, you know, my wife, who works a lot more with COVID patients, you know, I would make her listen. And I think she appreciated it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, of course. The at least the feeling of solidarity, and to see that people are, because it's, look, you guys have one of the hardest jobs, if not the hardest job. Emotionally taxing, physically draining, in normal circumstances. And people never think about that. You know, we take that for granted. So I have to imagine that it's especially, it's like, finally, you're right. We do work really hard.
It was a thing that even before this all started, there was a national discussion about, you know, what's called moral injury in physicians, basically burnout. And that was something that was a real serious discussion before all this. And it's a real issue now. I think it's going to be a problem. I mean, even though things are stable in a lot of the hot spots, it's an ongoing stress every day.
Yeah, but stable doesn't mean declining.
Yeah, not great. It's not great.
Like, okay, we're not growing, but it's still really bad.
Right.
And we are growing in some places. We'll get to that.
But even just like in the sense of like, it's still really bad. I feel like even that has been normalized to the point, like you're saying, like we don't do the cheers and stuff anymore. There are things that have dropped off as the number keeps rising. And like, it's not everything's cool now. It's like everything's still bad.
Right.
It's just not like the focus.
Right.
And it's sort of like gone into the background, this sort of background radiation that's still going on. And like, even the when it reached 200,000 dead, that there was no like front page thing about that, because we already did the 100,000. So now it's just another, you know, it's pretty grim.
I will say that I think people have been rounding up to 200,000 for weeks, but I'll also correct myself by saying I'm sure it's way more than that, and has been way more than that for a very long time. Another thing that I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. Of course, we invited you on because you're awesome, but also because we have a lot of questions about vaccines and masks, and just, you know, in general, we felt like we were way overdue for a coronavirus update. And my original intention was to make that the whole episode. However, the news never sleeps, and neither do we. We would be very remiss if we didn't start this episode off by talking about what's happening in Louisville this week. We all knew something bad was brewing when Louisville issued a preemptive state of emergency prior to an announcement regarding the investigation into the death of Breonna Taylor. We did. We knew that something bad was coming, but it was still unbelievably gutting when the official announcement came in that the only charges being brought were for Brett Hankinson firing into the neighbor's apartment. The other officers are not facing any charges. Gutting isn't quite strong enough of a word. Infuriating, heartbreaking.
Expected. Infuriatingly.
Expected. I actually didn't expect it to be this bad. This is like worse. I've seen somebody say this. I mean, lots of people have said this. It's almost worse than no charges, that her life wasn't the problem. It was just firing through some drywall.
The extra shot the wall bit was not expected. I can see how that is more infuriating. But the fact that there were no charges was expected, unfortunately.
This is from the AP, just an official quote to reinforce what I just told you. A Kentucky grand jury brought no charges against Louisville police for the killing of Breonna Taylor during a drug raid gone wrong, with prosecutors saying Wednesday that two officers who fired their weapons at the black women were justified in using force to protect themselves after they were shot at. The only charges brought by the grand jury were three counts of wanton endangerment against fired officer Brett Hankinson for shooting into a home next to Taylor's that had people in it. This is interesting. I wanted to mention justified in using force to protect themselves after they were shot at. I mean, that's part of a whole bigger conversation of why you're barging into homes in the middle of the night when you know that people have the right to protect their homes, you know. Why, you know, no-knock search warrants, all of this, the process of how we get search warrants, all of it, just police culture in general. But this idea of barging in and not thinking that somebody has the right to defend their home when we tell people that they have the right to defend their home.
I you know what amazes me about this story is why there are some people on the right who can't understand how upsetting this would be.
Right.
Particularly because, like, I feel like the worst nightmare of your typical right-wing gun-owning guy is some home invasion. That's like their ultra.
Right.
That's why they carry guns. That's why they want a gun. That's why it's all about home security, about safety, etc. Like, can you not understand then how terrifying it would be that someone was able to bust into your door, kill you, and not only that, there's no charges. You know, that to me is the part that I don't understand. That's so hurtful. I can only imagine what it'd be like to be in that situation, but that's an extra added stress that most Americans don't have to deal with.
It's it's another example of, like, I mean, it's the classic libertarian approach of don't tread on me, tread on them. That's what they really mean, unfortunately, more often than not.
And unfortunately, what followed is all as predictable as this and heartbreaking. You know, people organized and marched. They are continuing to organize and march. This happened yesterday. I'm referring to last night. And counter protesters, armed militias, showed up en masse.
They love doing that these days, don't they?
They love doing that these days. Everything just keeps ratcheting up. Two police officers were shot. It was interesting to see my timeline on Twitter. I know that there was other stuff happening, you know, stuff that I wasn't seeing, but you looked at anything with the Louisville trending and it was all a bunch of right wing people talking about Antifa, anarchists, Black Lives Matter killing cops. And like, well, they actually didn't die, but I don't want to say that it's okay that they were shot. I don't, you know, people being shot.
That's bad. It's always bad.
Is bad. But they weren't, killed right then, like Breonna Taylor was.
In their homes.
Framing it like that, in their homes. Yeah. And it's like, what do you expect? It's hard. I feel a responsibility to be positive and to give constructive advice. And it's hard to continue banging your head against this wall. I mean, like, people get mad at me online when I talk about how petitions don't work. But they don't work. Or I should say they work on some level, I'm sure, on a local level in certain situations. But for something like this, when everybody for the last many months has been posting about Breonna Taylor and signed this petition and urged this, and at the end of the day, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't. They don't care. They don't care how many people show up in the streets to protest. They don't care that armed militias are there and there's absolutely going to be violence. They don't care.
I mean, yeah, well, in a lot of places and cases, they want it to happen.
Like, and a lot of, yes.
It's frustrating now, especially because there's a lot of inevitable things, things that seem inevitable, things that seem intrinsically doomed, things that seem make it easy to feel like powerless and like nothing is worth doing. I think I'm struggling with what you were talking about, Katie, of like, what, how do you be constructive and helpful when you have all these sort of swirling feelings going around? And I saw, like, after the they announced the curfew and here's who got charged and so on, I saw so many people like, don't go protest, don't go out, that's what they want. And it's like, that's even more frustrating because, like, what do you want people to do? And if they're constantly worried about like how this helps Trump's base or like how it plays into his narrative, then you're never going to win because you're constantly playing by their rules. You're playing by the game that they have set up for you. It's why, like, even when like this is kind of unrelated, but like the, you know, Trump calling Joe Biden a socialist and him constantly having to be like, no, I beat the socialist. I hate socialism. Blah. And it's like, if you're playing by those rules, then you've already lost.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying don't show up and protest also.
I know. I'm not saying that you said that. It's the reaction I see a lot of like, don't do this. It's helping them. Like, I don't know. Where are we at now?
I mean, it just continually feels like the only way to get any change is to protest.
You were gonna say burn down a police precinct, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
I can't put myself officially say that, but mm-hmm. yeah, kind of. That's what makes things change. Although, you know, it's also so politicized right now, and that fuels into a narrative of. But I what are you gonna do? I'm mm-hmm. not gonna be afraid of that. There's certain lines in the sand. Anyway, it's. Obviously, a situation that is going to continue to evolve.
It is Joe Biden's Antifa's America, is what you're saying.
But we will be talking about this a lot more in the future. We almost certainly will be talking about it on Worst Year Ever next week, along with what's happening in Portland, continues to happen in Portland.
All the big anarchist jurisdictions in America.
Yeah.
About all those.
But there's a big protest in Portland this weekend, and there are going to be a lot of Proud Boys and whatnot there.
Yeah, there's a lot of leaked chats from a lot of right-wing militia groups that are planning on going to that, planning violence and things like that. So that's fun.
Yeah. So that's real fun. We'll look forward to talking about that. Also, a big thing that people may or may not have absorbed this week was a quote from our president yesterday refusing to say that there would be a peaceful transfer of power regardless of the election. And in fact, I don't have it right in front of me. He stuttered something along the lines of, in fact, there will be no transfer. There'll be a continuation.
He did say that's also
fun.
Something also along the lines of him saying that they'll get rid of the ballots as well. That won't be a problem. Just get rid of the ballots.
Mm-hmm. Can't trust the ballots. Yeah.
It's really, so this line he gave, he was being interviewed, and I forget who asked him, but one of the reporters asked him, basically, are you willing at this point to say that you will allow peaceful transfer of power, which is like a basic fundamental tenement of which this country is built on, which makes us supposedly, you know, such a great place. And he wouldn't agree to it. He wouldn't, and he mentioned throwing out ballots. It's terrifying. It's so terrifying. It's, you know what? So my parents came from another country because of political unrest and because of a messed up situation over there. So in a way, like it bothers me a lot as the son of immigrants. I think maybe even more so than typical Americans. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But it's because you know what it's like? It's like, you know, if you have like a born again Christian, sometimes they're the mm-hmm. most hardcore, like they're the biggest zealots. It's kind of like that with us. We're like, you know, we chose. It wasn't an accident of birth. We chose to become Americans, or at least my parents did. You know what I mean? So I have a lot of pride in being American. I know there's always been problems. I've known that, and that's true. But I've always had this pride, too. But when you hear things like this, it's really terrifying because it's really the fundamental belief of this country is that things like that can't happen. I mean, that's such an important thing. I know he says a lot of crazy shit. I can cuss, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. Go for it.
He says a lot of crazy shit, but that is particularly crazy shit. Like, that is Putin level. Even Putin wouldn't say that. Even Putin would pretend.
Yeah.
Or have the
not out loud.
Yeah, would at least pretend. Yeah,
right.
I frequently look at him and I think, he doesn't realize he's saying these words out loud. He's saying the private thoughts and not realizing it.
Yeah, and a lot of it, because he says whatever pops in his head, and it's usually steeped in like his sense of like survival, right? His personal survival. Part of it is like, well, yeah, he should at least don't say that out loud. Keep it to yourself. Like, obviously, we think that you're like this because you've said it before for years.
Right.
But I think part of it is just like when he's asked that, he can't, he's also incapable of entertaining the idea publicly that he could lose because that makes him seem weak, right?
Yes.
Right. So he can't be like, oh yeah, there'll be a transfer of power because that means that he's admitting that like, what else?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll lose, but he can't say that out loud.
Right.
For him, for his sake, and for his followers' sake. So
but
it's
yet,
like, yeah, it's weird thing this I've like, that's what he means, but also it comes from a personal fear too.
I've seen other people, you know, parents who immigrated here from places where, you know, escaping political regimes and all of that, and expressing that same sentiment of how terrifying this is. It's not just some words. This is how it happens, which is not new to any of our listeners. We've been talking about this for years now, but this is how it happens.
Yeah.
But don't worry, guys, because the Senate passed a unanimous resolution saying that they're going to honor the results of the election. So
wait a minute,
know.
That's sarcasm. I can tell. That was, you were doing
no,
sarcasm. You were doing the sarcasm. I can tell.
Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. I was doing the sarcasm.
They did that?
Yeah.
That was what they did with their time? Yeah. Okay.
Now I'm like, double check.
What? I mean, hey, that's what they want to do. That's cool. That's...
Senate passes resolution reaffirming commitment to peaceful transfer of power.
How messed up is it that the most uplifting part of this whole discussion is going to be the COVID part?
Unbelievable.
Isn't that wild? That's what I was thinking as I was prepping the document today. I was like, oof, just can't wait to get to the less depressing coronavirus talk.
What are they going to do? Are they going to wave the resolution in his face?
Yeah.
Like... But sir, we did this, like, unbelievable. Whatever.
Paper is binding. Also, we have them on record, so we know that they can't go back on what they say. Sorry, Cody, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's just like, it's that kind of stuff. And then, like, hammering on this thing where, like, you have, and it's not the same thing. It's just, it's hard to really cut through because you have, like, Hillary Clinton saying, like, Joe Biden shouldn't concede on the night of the election, which is true because you're not gonna have X and Y. Like, we all know why these are reasonable things, and in the face of Donald Trump just wildly saying like, yeah, of course I'm gonna be the president for 4-8 more years, whatever. But it's just it's just this chaotic thing where like now you have every day somebody's going to ask Donald Trump if he's going to concede the election, and every day he's gonna say something like he said, and it's gonna balloon even more, but also deflate even more.
Yeah.
The real concern that it is, because it is a real concern. He says it all the time. He talks about it. Everything he says about the post office is on its face, very obviously, like what is going on. But the more the media like pokes and prods in this way, it weirdly inflates and deflates the situation at the same time.
Well, also it's a testing of the waters, and so you see what the reaction is from people. Obviously, people on the left are going to be alarmed, but then you see how many people are, you know, condemning it, and there's not that many.
And then, right. And then, yeah, he goes into his rally
on
and
his
then he,
side,
then he jokes about it even more because he knows that it's going to trigger the libs. So he does that. And then it does do that. But again, this comes back to like, also like, don't let them make the rules. It's not like, don't let them make the rules of the game. So it's just a frustrating, impossible situation. I don't know what to say about it.
Cody,
I know what to say. go ahead.
You have a dark gift, Cody, for really getting into the mind of these sick guys like Cruz and Trump. It's a dark gift. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry too.
Put that on your resume. Special skills section.
To pretend I'm Ted Cruz. Awful. Just awful.
We're going to take a really quick break, and then we're going to talk about something way more uplifting. The coronavirus. And we are back as promised for even more news.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's talk coronavirus.
I was muted, but I said, yeah.
Yeah, you did. As Cody mentioned, in the United States, we are now at 201,000 people dead from coronavirus officially. On September 22nd, at least 942 new coronavirus deaths were seen, and 37,293 new cases were reported. Over the past week, we've seen an average of 41,490 cases per day, an increase of 13% from the average 2 weeks earlier. I'm presuming this is from schools, Labor Day weekend, general laxness across the board. We're definitely seeing more peaks in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Versus here.
No, I think you're spot on about that, about why we're having these. The schools are probably a big part of it, my thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, every couple of days, there's a piece. I'm like, this school had to shut down. It opened a week ago, but now all the kids have COVID, so we're going to shut down.
So we're going to shut it down. I want to start by talking to you about vaccines. We keep seeing articles coming out, you know, talking about timelines, you know, a vaccine can be distributed to everyone by the middle of 2021, or, you know, articles suggesting that Trump might announce something in November to sway people politically. In fact, just this week, a bunch of scientists testified before the Senate as the FDA tries to introduce stricter guidelines on approving vaccinations. And Trump hinted that this sounds like a political move, and that the White House wouldn't sign off on it, you know, and then, you know, went on to suggest that we might have something for people as early as next month.
I love when the president suggests things. That means it's true. That means he's looked into it. He didn't just think of it based off of a word he heard in a meeting he had the night before.
Yeah. But I would love to hear your thoughts about vaccines, you know, what's promising, what the timeline is. Realistically, I know that we don't actually know that until we have something, but
You know, I think there is a little bit of promise out there. I mean,
it's great.
I will say this: things are moving fast. This whole warp speed, Operation Warp Speed, to help you know mobilize the industry and get things moving. There's some definite pluses to it. There's high innovation. There's people approaching it from a lot of different angles. They're manufacturing ahead of time. So if something does work, we're going to hit the ground running. I think there's a lot of good things. I mean, there's some bad things too. I'm not totally convinced that the farm companies are communicating this very well, and that's been kind of weird. There's this new sort of nationalism about the vaccines, or what people are actually calling vaccine nationalism. So that's a kind of a little bit concerning, because, you know, in the past, history has told us that vaccines work best if there's great international cooperation, you know, mm-hmm. with China and Russia, which we're not really having. The major thing for me is I'm not hearing great communication from them, from the pharmaceutical companies, but there's some promise there. And it's really weird. What's really crazy to me is that, like, these nine pharmaceutical companies got together and they were like, okay, listen, we signed a pledge that we will not put any vaccine out there unless it's been fully vetted in a phase 3 clinical trial. And why this is weird, I don't know if you guys follow this sort of stuff naturally, but normally the way it goes is the exact opposite. The government is the one that's like, okay, slow down. Let's make sure this is safe. Let's make sure that people can tolerate. Now the pharmaceutical companies, which, listen, before I get emails, because trust me, I get plenty of emails about being a farm shill, because I'll talk about medications that work or vaccines.
Right.
But like, these are the farm companies are the ones that are like, well, let's slow down a little bit. Let's make sure this is done right. So it's a really weird,
it's like a real wild reversal,
weird reversal. That's for me.
Upsetting and alarming, but good. I mean, good in theory, like that they are being like the reasonable people in the situation, but that's.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's probably in their best interest. I think they know if they play ball now, it'll help them in the long run. So I do think there is a part of that, but overall, getting back to your original question, I do think there's a lot of promise. There's like 170 vaccines being trialed right now in different phases of it. And some of them are in phase 0, which is all the preclinical stuff, and then 1, 2, and 3. And there's about 10 now in the phase 3 trials, which means thousands of people are getting tested on these things. And some of them look pretty promising. So I actually do think that there is going to be some hope. Now, will anything be ready by October, like, you know, or November, like Trump has hinted at? I find that really hard to believe. I mean, it's not technically impossible. If they found like something that was so amazing that you had like 98, 99% effectivity, then they may rush it. But it's super unlikely. So I don't think that's a possibility. I think getting it out to most Americans by the middle of next year would be reasonable.
Really?
I think that,
that's great news.
I think that is, I think that's definitely possible. And that's what I would hope for. Maybe by even April, if things go well. And also, it might be sort of a staggered approach, too, because there's so many medications out there that the first one that we start using might not be the one that we use months later or years later. And there might be so many. The reason that I am kind of excited is that there are all these different options that might be available to us. Because if some of them work, if two or three of them or more work, then we might be able to create algorithms like, if you have this certain heart disease, if you're a certain age, if you are whatever certain comorbidities, you could take this vaccine. And then if you have these other problems, you can take this vaccine. So there might be some options. So I'm a little optimistic when it comes to that sort of stuff.
I love to hear it. That is,
we love optimism.
Way more positive of an update than I was expecting. Yeah, but I mean, it just daunts me to think about, okay, once you have it, even just the production and the distribution of, to people and what that looks like. But well, yeah, knowing that people are jumping on top of the manufacturing, I just get nervous because I also read things, you know, Russia has an untested vaccine they want to start distributing to people. And that is a terrifying prospect. Yeah. And the idea that Trump is...
Yeah,
more interested in getting something out soon there's versus a making sure
of,
that it's
fear and apprehension. I think when, and especially because of him specifically, and like the things that he says and how he tries to rush it, and to the point where like pharmaceutical companies had to be like, wait a second, we might not do the thing that you're asking,
right?
So like, if something does come out, I just know that there's and at the risk, like I keep seeing people share those concerns of like, well, a Trump vaccine, like that sounds kind of dangerous actually, but conflating that with being like anti-vax in general, which is not the same thing.
Totally not. No, yeah. I think it is completely reasonable to be suspect of anything that Trump pushes. I mean, this guy has pushed like intravenous IV light, UV light. So like, it's not, I totally understand that. And that's a real problem. I mean, when the vaccine comes out, if it is vetted, if they are transparent about it, and it, we're able, the scientific community, medical community is able to look at it, and then we do approve of it, which there's a lot of ifs there, then even then, yeah, there's going to be like, I've read anywhere in the AP and Reuters reports that there's like 30 to 60% of the population that doesn't feel like they'll take it.
Great.
Even after that.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I mean, that's hard to tease out like how many of them are like just worried about Trump. But like, that's a real concern because it works better, obviously, if we get more people doing it. Right. You hear people talking about this herd immunity. You hear like Paul Rand talk about herd immunity, and like 20% gives you herd immunity. It's nonsense. Yeah. You need to get at least 60 to 70%. Like, you need to get that level of like people vaccinated who have it. So even when we get it, even if they have the numbers, even if we are, all the manufacturing goes as planned and things work out great, then getting people to take it is a whole other kettle of fish.
Right. And depending on, who's even the president at the time, like there's obviously concern about Trump. If Joe Biden is the president, there's a whole other crop of people who are going to not want to take that.
Totally.
And they're usually in the camp that is going to be generally anti-vaccine anyway. So that's going to be a whole other.
Yeah. What are you're making this more stressful?
I'm sorry. No, it was very optimistic and positive. I apologize.
No, you're completely correct. Of course you are.
No, I'm
wrong. Of course
you
are.
Wrong. It's good and perfect and great.
Well, the vaccine, the anti-vaccine argument has vexed me for a very long, long time. And it's going to continue to be a problem here. I mean, actually, you know, traditionally, it's not necessarily just a right-wing issue, anti-vaccinations. In California, for example, it's also like educated left-wing parents in Marin not vaccinating their kids.
Oh, yeah.
Or people in Orange County. So it's been sort of co-opted a little bit by the right, and now they are talking about these Russian troll farms that put out misinformation about vaccines. I find that very believable. So it has been sort of co-opted by the right, but it's going to be really fascinating to see like where people land on this, you know, how politically someone's belief keeps them from getting, it's like weird that political beliefs kind of dictate how you wear a mask or if you wear a mask. It's going to be really...
Or if you wear a mask.
Yeah, if you wear a mask. It's going to be really weird to me to see how it changes vaccines too.
Yeah. And yeah, just how the... Yeah, the how that behavior will change for people depending on who is in the White House.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Fascinating is a word to say what's going to happen. Mentioned face masks. I wanted to bring up this article I read recently from The Telegraph. It's actually weird because I read it a while ago, but for some reason it just started trending on Twitter today. And I'd been going through it, like taking notes, and then I opened Twitter and was like, oh, weird. But the article basically suggests that face masks could be giving people COVID immunity. Basically, that it's saying that the theory is that mask wearing might be reducing the severity of the virus and helping make a lead to a bigger percentage of new infections being asymptomatic. Have you read that?
I don't know about that particular article, but that is something that has been discussed, that that you're getting possibly less severe infections because of it. We don't know for sure. I mean, it seems to be that way. So there is now evidence that proves not only do masks help from spreading, from you spreading it, but they also may help with the severity of it once you get it, possibly because it's about the viral load that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really know. And by the way, I will first start by saying back in February or March, whenever we talked last time, we talked about masks. And I was like, I don't know if they're going to be that useful. But I was wrong. I mean, the science has come out that shows it helps. I mean, I got to admit, I was a little surprised that it looks as useful as it does. And the numbers seem to be showing that. So possibly.
Well, in fairness, everybody was wrong. I mean, there just wasn't enough information. We were learning.
I mean, but that's the thing about science is you do the best with what you can at the time. And that's how science works. It changes based on what facts come to you. You take those facts, you deal with them. And that's where so much of this issue comes with people and drives me crazy. They're like, oh, you said no masks and now he said mask. I don't know who to believe anymore. You know?
I know. It frustrates me so much. Also, people were saying we don't know if masks help for a very short time compared to how long we've been saying wear a mask.
Right.
You know, that was maybe 3 weeks, a month of people not wearing masks. Let it go. We all said, at the time, everybody also said, we don't know. Right now we're saying don't because there's a shortage of masks, you know, and that was also part of that whole thing. But I found that article really interesting. And I'd originally seen it because a friend of mine was just asking, why is the death rate so much lower in places outside of like New York City, for example? You know, in California, our death rate is lower over time. And then he kind of went down a tunnel and we were sharing articles and I saw this one. And I just think it's all interesting. It's also like we just said, we're learning more as we go.
It is interesting. If that turns out to be the case, that would be kind of an interesting fact about this virus, that the viral load you're exposed to makes a difference. And that's why we think there was, you know, in the beginning, when doctors were really getting sick and dying, we think it's because they're just being exposed to huge viral loads from patients coughing and stuff and getting all that in. There's still a lot to learn about that. I mean, that's changing a lot still, but the masks might be helping with that. Wearing them may help limit the amount of viral load that you get. And so
they gave one example that was interesting that I jotted down. I mean, they're doing experiments. Again, I think we've been clear. It's all a theory still, you know, but experiments have been promising. But they pointed to one situation, the cruise ships, the early outbreaks on cruise ships. And so the Argentinian cruise ship that was quarantined, everybody was provided with N95 masks. And the asymptomatic infection rate went up to 81% in comparison with earlier cruise ships where the asymptomatic infection rate was only 20%. There could be any number of things, but I thought that was interesting. I was like, wow, because, you know, you've already mentioned it's the viral load. You're exposing people to a smaller amount of the viral load than their body still is triggered, is having an immune response.
Yeah.
And so it's similar to how a vaccine works,
Yeah, is that the case for other viruses? Like, is it very surprising that that would be the case for this?
No, it's not incredibly surprising. It's just that what's hard to understand about this virus is that a big part of the problem comes from the immune response that you get. Which is kind of why, there's a little bit of trickiness to making a vaccine for this. I mean, we were lucky in making a vaccine that we had sort of the blueprint already laid out for the SARS virus. That was back in like 2003, I think. And we had that sort of laid out already. So people were able to use that information to get started, which is a big part of the reason why it's not taking the 5 to 10 years it normally takes to make a vaccine. That's a big part of it. And what we saw is that with typical viruses, once you get them, they can replicate in your body. They're going to cause their issue. Here in this case, with this particular virus, if you reach a certain load, it does seem to trigger this immune response. Maybe there's other factors we just don't know about. Maybe there's some genetic predisposition that changes the way you respond to it. But the real issue is where everyone gets really sick. They get this really bad lung disease that's horrific. They get this vasculitis. They get all these blood problems. They get the bleeds. They get all this coagulation issue. You know, that comes, we think, probably from this immune response that you can have to it. So that's why it's a bit weird. It's a bit hard to understand that is. But like you guys have mentioned, we're learning a ton about it. I think we're going to continue to learn a lot more about it. And I think in a year or two, we're going to have a much better understanding of this. And it doesn't shock me, I guess, that the masks are helping in that way.
I actually just remembered as we were talking and you're talking about a lung infection and everything that you were in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how the fires are affecting things for you guys with all the smoke and everything. Have you, people increase in people hospitalizations or people coming to the hospital for respiratory things?
Thankfully, not too much, but there is an increased risk of, the inhalation causing lung damage. Any lung damage probably predisposed you to worse disease of COVID if you were to get it.
Yeah.
It was awful. It was awful. Yeah. I tweeted out a couple pictures of an orange sky. It was like a Mad Max movie. It was insane. Yeah. I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, it was the most visceral, tangible sense of global climate change. And it was super disturbing because up till then, even through all this COVID stuff, we could at least open a window. You could at least like go out. You could be out in nature or something. But we literally couldn't go out. And I mean, I know in LA it was also a problem, but
it was not as bad as up north.
As there were days, there was a week that we just couldn't leave the house. And we have air filters going on, and we check the AQI. Everyone knows an AQI now.
Yeah.
So. And it was really disheartening. That was actually the first time throughout this whole process that I was like, I almost got broken. That was like the final straw for me. That was really hard. And
my
then,
God, and just showing up to work and all of it, just all the pressures from this.
It was really,
that on top of it.
Really weird driving to work under an orange sky.
Yeah.
And then that was a trip. Now sky, thankfully, is better. The air is better. I mean, I've never been so grateful for the ability to open my window. It's an insane simple thing. You just don't know how nice it is to be able to open your window.
Yeah.
It was not good here in LA, nowhere near to what it was like there or in Portland. But even here, I felt that. It was like I was going to jump out of my skin. I felt like it was okay to go outside, but not for any long period of time. And the sky just being so dark. I remember the first time I saw a fire. I grew up in California, but I don't know why I was so not aware of wildfires. They are definitely more prevalent now. But I wasn't really affected by one until I went to college in San Diego and went to sleep not knowing about a fire. And I woke up and the sky looked like that. And all my posters were curling on the wall. And I was like, oh no, is it too late for me to find God? Is this the apocalypse? Like, what is happening? Little 18-year-old me. Never too late. I still haven't found him though, or her.
They're somewhere, surely.
But,
right?
But I definitely relate to, I mean, I can't imagine living in that for so long as you guys were, because it's been going on a long time.
It's very surreal. That's unnatural. I mean, it's very natural, actually. It's
right.
What's happening, but
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just this on top of everything. I mean, everything moves so fast that it's easy to forget, like, oh yeah, a week and a half ago, that was happening.
it does freak me out a little bit. There was like a little part of me that stayed up late one night just being like, holy shit, what if this is all this COVID? Everyone talks about 2020, this year, like all the badness is because of the year, the number. But like,
yeah,
what if this is just a warm up? What if this whole COVID experience is just one warm up before this massive global climate change just destroys our lives? And
I think it is.
There's a little part of me, a little part of my brain that's like, let's bring on the Thunderdome. Let's see what happens. Let's see if I can handle the apocalypse. But then I have kids and I'm just, that's all I think about. It's like, what the hell has happened to this world? What are we leaving?
That's really interesting to me. You're saying that. Just today, I was texting with a friend who was like, it just keeps getting worse. And I was saying, it feels like I'm in training, you know, like weight training, and I've got some weight vest on and they keep upping my weight and putting a little bit more on and a little bit more on. And the other thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I'm going to start talking about this with people, I think, is who do I want to be on the other side of this? Whatever the other side of this is. And I keep thinking about this weight training thing, as this is a time for me to get strong for the next part and for all the things that are coming next. Like, I think that we'll get to a place where it's not as much constant barrage, one thing after the other. I think that that is going to abate a bit, but that doesn't mean that these hugely critical fights have been fought. We're just beginning.
I mean, the Trumpiness of it, the chaos, that Trump style of chaos will subside a bit because he won't be able to just say whatever he wants no matter what and get away with it and toy with, you know, more than half the country and all the things that he does. But like, the events will keep piling up, I think. And like you're talking about, like, I feel like we've talked about that a little bit, Even Worst Year Ever, where this is kind of a preview. This isn't the only pandemic, probably. It's not the only spooky ass sky that we're gonna see. It's not the only time we're gonna be every month now there's a lockdown in a city and a curfew because of an announcement that they're going to make that they know will cause civil unrest. The climate isn't getting better. Our managing of it might get a little better and more responsible, but preparing for a slightly different reality and world is good now when we're kind of locked in, because when we can finally we can go out, we can open our windows and we can hug each other. We can,
but we can't forget
feel, like that, the human connection again and all this stuff. That will be back, but it won't get rid of the problems that we had to deal with.
Before we go, I want to leave time to talk about one other story that
you
mentioned.
No, you can't leave time, Katie. Time's going to catch up with you.
Or topic. I know it is. Which is the CDC and people's disintegrating trust in it. We'll end it on such a nice, happy high note.
it's really troubling. And I'd probably throw the FDA in there, too. You know, I think of all those organizations, I think the NIH, they kind of knew how to deal with political pressure the most. I think Fauci knows what he's doing. I think I'm holding this up. The listening audience can't tell, but literally, the guy wrote the book on medicine.
Wow.
This is Harrison.
Wow.
Fauci. This is like the book that all medical students get. This is, see how thick this is? It's impressive.
It's really big.
The guy knows his medicine. The guy knows, I think, how to operate within politics. So I think he's done his very best. But the FDA and the CDC, I think the pressures they were getting seem newer to them. I don't think they handled it quite as well. And the CDC was once the gold standard. You know, people came from all over the world to go work at the CDC. And now it's clear that, you know, from their changing their guidelines to this ridiculous don't, you know, screen and trace people, like, to changing. Rachel Maddow on her show did this report on how they were pressured to change the language of one of their reports when mm-hmm. there was an outbreak in a meat packaging plant in, like, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. There's so much pressure on them. I don't think they have the ability to fend it off the way the NIH does. And it's ruining what are the nation's reputation and the world's reputation has.
The world, because people look to us for leadership. They've looked to us for our research.
And they can't anymore. I mean, they will be able. I do have faith in the medical and scientific community. And I think that the people at the CDC, these career, you know, scientists who've been at the FDA and the CDC, they're still great scientists. They're still the same people. They're still there. They're, at some point, I think we'll see them emerge as a powerhouse again, or we'll see their respect return. But right now, I see doctors, all the doctors I know, I mean, we all now take the CDC and the FDA with a grain of salt. And, like, we're having a hard, which is crazy. That's crazy to me. The CDC yeah. were, like, the ninjas of the infectious disease community. They would drop in, figure out what's going on, write these great reports, very, very hardcore, and then they would leave. They were super well respected. And that conversation has changed now. I think that reputation yeah. has definitely changed.
We hear that and we say, it's Trump. And I think that that's true in the stuff that he's done. Do you think that this is primarily something that's happened exclusively over the last four years, or were some sort of erosions, do you think, happening prior to that?
That's a good question. I'm sure that the Obama administration probably placed pressures on those organizations as well. It just never seemed quite so obvious. And it never seemed to...
And blatant here.
And it never seemed to change the language of what they yeah. wrote or what they said. I mean, literally, the guidelines on the CDC website were changed by the administration. That the fact that somebody not a scientist, not somebody who's actually doing the work, wrote those guidelines, it's insane. And I think it's criminal. I mean, that really, really bothers me. Like, even like the Stephen Hahn, the head of the FDA, I think that's his name. He came out not too long ago it seems like 3 years ago, but it was probably like a week or two ago when he was with Trump and they were talking about plasmapheresis and the benefits of plasmapheresis. And it was a really small thing, but he was trying to sell it because Trump was trying to sell it. They were trying to sell the benefits of it and how we have all these great treatments. And so he used the wrong statistic. He said there's a 35% improvement, which means if, like, you have 100 patients who do it, 35 will survive because of it, which is not at all the number that they should have used. They should have been using the absolute risk reduction, which is what you would, if you were in a medical conference, if you're in like a morning report and you're around a bunch of doctors and you made a mistake like that, even if it was totally accidental, even if he didn't mean to lie, you would get torn apart by the medical community. You would be torn apart because how big a mistake that is and how drastic the consequences could be if people didn't pay attention to it. So the fact that that's happening now at the highest levels of our healthcare system is, I find, very troubling. So, yeah, I'm bothered. I'm really bothered by the whole thing.
I am too. I agree with you completely, as we say around here.
It's real bothersome. Real. Like, and again, like, you want to... It just gives fuel to people who want to spin that dishonestly for their own gains instead of, like, addressing the actual problem. And
yeah. I mean, I'm just going back to what I'd said earlier about this whole FDA trying to add stricter regulations for approving viruses, which vaccines. Yeah. We're not approving viruses around here.
but,
you know,
approval.
Which from what I deduced here is primarily about, like, saying, like, getting other countries and other people involved to sign off on things because this is a worldwide issue. Yeah. And Trump saying the White House won't sign off on that.
Yeah.
Talking about political pressure on our science community.
That is scary. I mean, it was nice to see Fauci and the FDA come yeah. out pretty strong against that. And I'm not that worried about it because there's so many eyes on it now. I do feel like everyone in the scientific community cares. I mean, trust me, virology is not my bag. I don't like, I mean, I like hepatitis and
liver disease.
That's, that interests me. But in general, it's not like I spend my time reading like about immunology. It's not like how I spend a lot of my spare time. But even like I'm really fascinated by the subject now. So there are eyes on this, you know, that I think is a really good thing. And much smarter doctors and scientists than me are going to be watching this. So I do feel a little bit more confident that that'll be okay.
Well, I like that. And that seems like a good place to wrap things up.
We've got a couple to that.
we've got some good takeaways here. There's been some dark stuff, but focus on the fact that there is a lot of promise and a lot of hope to be had, at least in regards to a vaccine. Yeah. Thank you again so much for taking time. I know you're super busy. Work, Corona, all the stuff that we're doing, kids. And we really appreciate it. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Yes. So find us on Twitter. We have like 10 followers, so it'd be good to get more at the House
of
Pod.
I'm one of them.
Yes. Thank you. We're at the House of Pod, and you can listen to our podcast. Myself and my co-host, Lizzie, we talk about medical topics from gun control, abortion, to moving to New Zealand to practice there, which show is the most accurate depiction of the medical world.
It's a really great show. They're fun and they have a great energy. So
thank you.
It's very interesting.
So find us, the House of Pod, wherever you listen to podcasts and that sort of thing.
Do it, guys. You heard the man.
Do it.
And before we go, I just want to take a moment and remind you that we love you very much.